Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey. Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
This is the Skate Podcast on WEEI.com.
Bobby Orr, behind the net to Sanderson, Orr! Bobby Orr! Orr!
For the first time in 39 years, the Boston Bruins have won the Stanley Cup.
Talking Bruins and NHL.
Sure, old-time hockey. Like it is sure. Yeah.
With writer and producer Brian DeFelice.
Brian DeFelice is an emerging talent.
Bridget Prue.
Yeah, he's a little bit on the hot seat.
Burn him!
And WEEI.com Bruins writer Scott McLaughlin.
Great Scott!
Lace him up for some Bees talk right now.
I'm a damn dog!
It's the Skate Pod on WEEI.
Welcome in to episode 154 of the Skate Podcast. I'm DeFelice, joined by Bridget Prue and Scott McLaughlin. Wednesday and Thursday, the Bruins defeated the Islanders and Rangers, respectively, in a back-to-back 4-1 and 3-1. So obviously, outscoring them 7-2 in the process. Both teams, Islanders and Rangers, presented different challenges to the Bruins, two different styles of play. But on a back-to-back, the Bruins just... What else is new? A very, very impressive showing the last two nights by this team.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think anytime in the NHL you have back-to-backs, you always wonder about that second night. In this case, obviously, very little travel. They just have to hop on train or bus or whatever, go from the Islanders arena to Manhattan. But still, against a Rangers team that's been playing well, going up against Igor Shesterkin, big game for Swayman. You know, I feel like a lot of these back-to-back this year, they've kind of saved Ullmark for the second night of it. This time Swayman gets it and plays really well, nearly has a shutout. Rangers score late. But yeah, you know, again, like Islanders game, Bruins certainly didn't play their best for full 60 minutes. I thought, you know, Rangers game better, still had stretches where they weren't at their best, but just able to kind of take control when it matters, and obviously got great goaltending both nights. I thought the defense was really good against the Rangers, especially after Carlo went down on his first shift of the second period, which I know we're going to get into that a little bit more, but the other five defensemen stepped up and, you know, and they're able to come away with the win.
Yeah, and two goals from defensemen in the Islanders game too. So like adding offense, Clifton had a goal against the Rangers as well, set up by Marchand. But the defense showed that it can do pretty much anything in this back-to-back. Like they had stretches where they were great on the penalty kill, stepping into the offense, you know, moving pucks on the power play and scoring. So it was nice to see Forbert, aka Scorbert, score again against the Islanders, and also another goal for Pavel Zacha. So another two goals for Pavel Zacha, one in the Islanders game, one in the Rangers game, right? So he's continued to be on a tear. Second line has looked good, and just I think maybe the biggest takeaway is, if we want to go into the Carlo injury, like off the top, because just lineup implications, like you have DeBrusk down. And if Carlo has to be out for a stretch of time, you're missing two guys that are important at this point. And we're just kind of the whole season, we're waiting for the shoe to drop on like a stretch where there were multiple injuries and people out, besides when McAvoy and Marshawn and Grzelcyk in the beginning of the season, which we already knew were going to be out with their surgeries. So what do you guys think? Obviously blocks a shot, looked like it hit him in the foot. Couldn't tell if it was like instep or shoelaces. Comes off the ice, needs help walking down, which, by the way, didn't have a tunnel, really weird situation where the way that he had to walk off behind the glass. And what did you guys think of the injury? What'd you see on it? And also, what is the solution for the Bruins if he's going to miss time?
Scott, you want to take this one?
Yeah, well, you know, so obviously didn't return to the game. I think if there's any reason to be slightly encouraged, it's that the Bruins did not immediately rule him out. When they finally issued the injury update during the second intermission, it was that he was unlikely to return, and obviously he didn't. But, you know, usually if they know a guy's out, they just say he's out. So, you know, that would at least lead you to believe that maybe it's not too serious, because, you know, they didn't definitively rule him out. But he was clearly pretty hobbled and, you know, I'm sure in a good amount of pain. That was a hard shot by Zibanejad, and, you know, he finished out the shift. It was on the penalty kill, so he didn't really have an option. But yeah, that was it for him for the night. It's, you know, Bridget, you mentioned, like, obviously that they had a ton of injuries early on this season, and, you know, they've had 10 defensemen play in a game this season, but they haven't had any injuries in the blue line since Forbert returned from his broken hand. And that was like the end of November. They've basically gone 2 months with just the same 6 defensemen. The only minutes from any other defenseman in the last 2 months were the one game that they went 11 forward 7D and Jacob Zboril played about 6 minutes. Like, that's it. You know, that's the only time you've seen Zboril, and he's been with the team practicing. Obviously, Mike Riley's been in Providence. He played, you know, I think 10 games earlier in the season. Anton Strahlman played some, but he's been in limbo, basically. Like, they technically, you know, waived him and sent him to Providence, but he never actually reported until, oddly enough, today. Friend of the pod, Mark Diver, tweeted that he was practicing with Providence today and was potentially an option to play a game with Providence at some point soon. So now, okay, obviously he's doing at least something to ramp up towards game action. So, you know, you would have to assume that if Carlo does miss any time, Zboril would be the next guy up. Montgomery has had good things to say about Zboril and, you know, said like he's practicing well. Like the way he played in the 6 minutes in that one game 2 weeks ago, and said, you know, he really doesn't deserve to sit this long, but like, who are you going to bench from their defense? So, you know, now we'll actually see how much he believes that. Like, now we'll actually see if that translates, because if Carlo does miss any time, presumably Zboril would be the one going in.
Yeah, and also to the Strahlman thing, like, obviously you would expect him to need some time in Providence now after being away from the ice so much. So like, he's not going to come up right away, because presumably he's got to get back into, you know, the flow of things being away when all these other guys are mid-season form that he's going to be playing against. So I would guess Zboril would be the first option there. And then Strahlman is just interesting to keep an eye on, because obviously he adds depth that the Bruins need in case somebody else goes down, or in case, you know, maybe Zboril doesn't play well. You want to have that defenseman as an option to call up. So it'd be really good for them if he does continue in Providence and doesn't, you know, just kind of call it quits on the season.
Huge sigh of relief that Carlo was not ruled out right away, obviously, like Scott mentioned. And so that makes me think, you know, obviously anything can happen overnight, but that's a big sigh of relief for the team. As far as Zboril goes, you know, I'm looking at his page on the Bruins website, and, you know, you're talking about a guy who's turning 26 years old, about a month from now, actually, and drafted 8 years ago this June. He's played 68 games for the Bruins. 68. Now, obviously, a lot of that was injury riddled, and that's why. But there's also been a large enough sample size without him on the injury block where he's just not cracking this Bruins lineup. And to take it a step further, 1 goal, 12 assists, 13 points in a Bruins uniform since being drafted in June of 2015. And I know it's not as black and white as I'm making it appear. I did, though, just mention that injuries are a big part of that. But I'm just looking at him, and I haven't been impressed with him this year outside of that one preseason game where that means nothing really. I know one of you guys mentioned Montgomery said he hasn't deserved to be out this long. Fair enough. But he also never did anything really in his time on the ice this year, limited time, albeit to really, I guess he's the next man up by default. Right. But it's he hasn't shown much this year that makes me confident in him going forward as a part of this team. I wonder if, I don't know what his contract status is at the moment. I should probably look that up before I make this next comment, but I wonder if he's somebody that another NHL team might look at and say, he's only 25 years old, turning 26. Maybe we can utilize this kid in a rebuild team and give him some more opportunity. I wonder if the Bruins look to move him. The only thing is, as like we're talking about right now, one guy goes down, who's next guy up? It's either Stromlin or Zboril. So you always need depth on defense, but I just don't know what Zboril's future in Boston is other than step up when someone goes down.
Yeah, I think for now that's all. It's just depth. And, you know, right at this very moment, he's the seventh defenseman. We'll, you know, to the point that we've been discussing, like, we'll see if that sticks. We'll see if, you know, if there's still a path for Stralman to elevate ahead of him, or if Riley's back at any point, or obviously trading for a defenseman is an option. And, you know, I think everyone's kind of identified, you know, getting another veteran defenseman as, you know, potentially the path that Don Sweeney goes leading up to the deadline. And I agree with that, but at the same time, I'm like, well, what do they think of Anton Stralman? Because like, he would be that guy. Like, he would be that veteran defenseman who you could plug in if he's like up to NHL level, which early on this year, it didn't really look like he was. We know he had the weird visa issue and he missed time. And, you know, he talked about how like he'd never been in a situation like this where he was, you know, a healthy scratch more often than not. And it took a while to adjust to that. And then he just gets outright waived because there's no more room for him once, you know, Grizzly and McAvoy come back and Forbert's back from his broken hand. There just wasn't a spot for him. So you wonder, it's like, okay, well, I highly doubt he's gotten better just skating on his own or, you know, scrimmaging over the last 2 months. Like, that's, you can work hard, and I'm sure he is, and you can stay in shape, but that is way off playing in NHL games. Like, that is, you know, that's going to be, to Bridges' point earlier, like, he probably does need time in the AHL at this point, because he has just gone so long, not just without playing in an NHL game, but without practicing against NHLers. Like, he can't practice with the Bruins because he's not on the active roster. So,
yeah. And I thought that he looked a half step behind even when he was playing, you know, more often. Like, he did seem a little bit slower than some of the guys he was having to defend against. And obviously age is a factor. He's older. He's playing against guys that are really skilled, young, in their early 20s. But it just seems like it will be kind of an uphill battle for him to get back where he needs to be in order to, you know, be the first guy that they call up. I still think Zboril is the one that they're going to look to here for if Carlo needs to miss time at all. Like, we're not really sure. He might be back, you know, one game, two games out. Hopefully that's the case, but it still brings up the conversation. And we talk about how deep the Bruins are. Yeah, when they're healthy, they've been able to keep, you know, one forward injury, you know, no defensive injuries for a while. So it's it's not something they've dealt with yet. And it's one of the things where we're going like, well, the Bruins are on this tear and there's no slowing them down unless, and then we're hitting this point where they get a scare in that sense with Carlo, and Carlo's been playing well. And he's another guy that eats up a lot of PK time. And he's clearly a better option than Zboril. So you're taking someone out of the lineup that is the better option, someone that you want in your top six and to be out there every night. But we will keep a really close eye on him, what his status is. I don't believe Montgomery updated him after the game. He mentioned Carlo, but only in the sense to say that the other five defensemen stepped up when he left, without issuing an update. As far as I know, Scott, I can tell, is Googling or going on Twitter, I should say, and checking if any of the local beat writers that traveled to New York actually were able to get an update on that.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything as of when we're recording this, which is kind of, you know, shortly right after the game. So obviously Montgomery, you know, met with media there, but no one tweeted anything. I don't know if he was asked or not. So I guess we'll just have to wait until the Bruins post that audio or video.
I want to keep it to the defense real quick, guys, and I want to throw a question into your courts. Against the Islanders, Charlie McAvoy got his third goal of the season. It was his first goal. It's a loss in Florida, I believe, back in November. He's played 32 games this year, 3 goals, 24 assists for 27 points. And 27 points in 32 games for a guy who missed all of camp and didn't really have a full summer to skate and get ready for the season, along with what he does on, you know, defensively, is it's great. But as the Bruins enter the second half of the year, obviously McAvoy is going to have to go from being what he's been right now to hopefully the Bruins think he's going to be, you know, a premier, one of the best defensemen in the world come playoff time, which he's capable of being. So I ask you guys, that as the Bruins get into the second half of the season here, and Charlie's got, 32 games under his belt now, what would you like to see him do even better going forward here to become or turn back into what he's capable of being and has shown in the past?
I feel like he gets that number one power play unit time, but like there's been times, especially in the Rangers game recently, just to name an example, where sometimes at the point he's not like necessarily acting like Charlie McAvoy on the power play. Like either he's not moving the puck the same way, or he's not holding pucks in the same way. And I know these are minor critiques. He's Charlie McAvoy. He doesn't do it that often, but still noticeable because of how good he's been in the past. When he does do things like that, you're like, okay, well, maybe he's still a little bit off. And that's something he might need to work on, because you want to maintain possession, especially at the point on the power play. You don't want to, you know, give up that possession and have to take things back out of the zone.
Yeah, I also think 5-on-5, where I would say like over maybe the last week or two, we're finally starting to see him get more involved offensively, where he's getting down low more often and getting more involved in chances, and he's put up some points as a result. And you know, I think that pairing with him and Grizzly, like, they've been really solid defensively the entire time they've been together. Now you see, but when they've been at their best in the past, like, they're very involved offensively, almost like at times it's just five interchangeable parts in the offensive zone. And you're starting to see that more. You saw, you know, a D to D connection on a goal against the Islanders between them. And you're starting to see both of them more involved there. And I feel like that's kind of a sign of McAvoy's confidence coming back, is that, you know, he is taking more chances and jumping up more. The other thing I think, you know, you might still want to see more of from him is just the physicality. Like, you know, I feel like he's not, we haven't seen as many of those, you know, big clean hits that we usually see from him. There's still been some, like, it's not like it's non-existent. but that they do feel like a little fewer and far, but further between than they have been in the past. So those are two things that, like, I think you still want to see coming along, is just getting more involved offensively, taking more chances, because he generally makes good things happen when he's on his game and he does take those chances. And then more physicality and kind of helping to set the tone more that way.
And I really do think that it's almost there. Like, I feel like it's like you said, we saw it with Grzelcyk and McAvoy in this back-to-back, and it just feels like it's really close to being where it needs to be. It's just like, we're about to turn a corner here. If I was to guess, I'd say that it starts clicking soon here for them, but it does get complicated with, you know, maybe the need to mix pairs around if you have an injury on the back end. So
the nastiness that you alluded to, Scott, that physicality, that's kind of where my mind was going as well. I've definitely noticed the slow burn it's been for him with the offensive confidence on the at the top of the umbrella, like Bridget mentioned, but that level of nastiness, that physicality that Charlie has to his game is something that a lot of other elite defensemen don't have. Like, you look at an Adam Fox, for example. I mean, Kale McCarr can certainly dish out the physicality a little bit too, but when McAvoy is at the peak of his game, he's bringing it on both ends of the puck, but also he has a little bit of nastiness, a little bit of peskiness that gets under the opponent's skin. Now, with that said, I'm not necessarily longing for that so far this year. And I'm not saying he has to do it next game. I'm more so talking about as we build towards the latter half of the season and into the playoffs, where he needs to continue to get back to speed. And I think it's just a matter of not having a full off season. And I think there is some trepidation, right? When you have shoulder surgery in the off season, obviously you don't want to damage that again on an open ice hit, maybe in January. Maybe you kind of want to just make sure you're still revving back up, and you'll take that chance maybe in the first round of the playoffs, but maybe not on the second of a back-to-back in New York, you know?
I want to say too, it's not been the Bruins haven't been lacking in that area, luckily, because I feel like Connor Clifton is a guy that comes through with some big hits when you need them. Where in the past it had been McAvoy. Now Clifton has been able to be that guy and do it cleanly. And he's also been able to step into the offense the way that we had seen a Grzelcyk or a McAvoy step in the past. So even though McAvoy isn't quite at that level that he can be, it's been nice to see Grzelcyk pick up, you know, some of those things that he's not been able to do as well.
Yeah. And, I was just thinking too, like, I think it was last week I asked McAvoy after one of the games, just kind of like bigger picture, how he felt about where his game was. And, you know, and he said, like, you know, he feels like he's making progress. He's had to be patient, but he also said, like, it was it's the biggest surgery he's ever had. And he said, like, it was a completely new experience having to kind of come back, you know, almost a month into the season. And like, everyone else has already been building their game for a month and getting up to speed for a month. And then you kind of just jump in and he was like, you know, that was different and it took a while to kind of catch up to everyone. I feel like that's even more noteworthy now that we're talking about the potential of Carlo, you know, possibly missing time, where it's, you know, again, these guys who just haven't played. And it's like any one of them, whether it's Zboril, who's been practicing but not playing, or Strahlman, who hasn't been doing either, or Riley, who's been playing but in the AHL, it's like any one of those guys, I bet it's not going to look very smooth when they get back in, because, you know, it's awesome for the Bruins that they went 2 months with no injuries on the blue line and not having to change their lineup at all. But it also makes it tough now once if you do have to change your lineup, like those guys are gonna, you know, it's gonna take a little bit for them to get back in. And again, they're guys who were like already, you know, I don't know if I'm like struggling or you know, weren't really thriving when they were playing a little more earlier in the season. So, I think whoever that sixth defenseman is, if Carlo misses time, is going to probably be pretty sheltered, at least to start.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's going to be an uphill battle for Zaboral, Riley, or Strawman, whoever it may be. Because when you're on the outside, it just becomes an even bigger hill to climb because you're missing those reps and because you're missing that time. So, and you already maybe feel down about the fact that you haven't been in. So it's mentally and physically, you know, kind of an uphill battle for you.
Guys, I'm looking at I wanted to bring up a player to you guys, and so I just pulled up his game log. I'm actually surprised at this. Dating back to December 22nd, so that's 14 games. Taylor Hall only has three points in his last four games, three assists. Now, I wanted to bring him up because I knew he had been struggling a little bit in the last handful of games. So, but then when I expanded it, it dates back to the 22nd of December against, like I said, versus Winnipeg. Now, the two games before that, he had 4 points combined. But regardless, so his last 14 games, he has three assists. And I wanted to bring him up because he also he's been noticeably acceptive of his role this year, whatever it's been in his two-way game. You notice a lot on back checks. But tonight, I noticed a lot of foolish turnovers, trying to go through people's skates, bad habits, really. Now, it's not an elongated sample of bad habits, but I noticed it tonight and a couple has cost the Bruins. But I want to get you guys' opinion on what might be. Do you think he's lacking confidence? Do you think it's time to maybe put him up with Bergeron and Marchand instead of Smith to get him going? Because 3 points in 14 games, that's a bit of a slump.
I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to talk about him today as well. And noticing him kind of shoot the Bruins in the foot on one of the power plays as well, in the turnovers. And it just popped in my mind, like, you can just tell such a difference because those games coincide with when he's moved off the wing with Krejci, right? Like his skill set isn't as well complemented with Coyle and Frederick. He just isn't at his best when he's playing with them. I'm not saying he's necessarily bad, but he kind of disappears with that line being Coyle and Frederick being two more physical guys, puck protection guys, not the skilled playmaker, you know, individual effort kind of guys. A little bit more of a grinder line than what Hall was getting when he played with Krejci. Which complemented his skill set much better. So you see the correlation in the way he plays when he plays next to different centers in the past. Last season, Coyle and him, the chemistry wasn't necessarily there. It looked okay for a little bit of this season this year, but I think there's a big...
I mean, it looked really good for a little bit this season.
Like, yeah, it did.
They were, I mean, when for the first couple of weeks that Hall, Coyle, and Frederick were together, they weren't just the Bruins' best line. They were one of the best lines in the NHL. Like they were putting up crazy 5-on-5 numbers. So, and I thought they, beyond just like scoring or, you know, lucking into goals, like I thought they were playing really well and they looked like they were complimenting each other.
Doesn't it feel like that's kind of fallen off though?
Yes. But I guess what I say is like, I don't feel like that line is playing poorly. Definitely no. The offense has dried up a little bit. And Hall's been part of that. But then like you also have a game against Toronto where they get used as the matchup line against Matthews and shut down the Matthews line. So it's like, well, okay, how upset can I really get with them? Like if they're being asked to do that and they do it successfully, okay, then mission accomplished. Like, That's a good third line. If you have a third line that sometimes can be a scoring line, sometimes can be a matchup line, like that's a good place to be in. But it also feels like you're then limiting what Taylor Hall can bring because there is still a really good offensive player in there. And if you're asking him to take on more defensive shifts, like I think he's in a headspace where he, you know, he's okay with that. Like he just wants to win. He wants to help the team win. But when he gets in stretches where he's producing and putting up points, you're like, oh yeah, he can still do that. So it does feel like he's getting buried a little bit. And Brian, to your point, like whether it would, you know, I don't know how comfortable Hall would be playing on the right wing. I think he's done it extremely rarely in his career. So, you know, I don't know if that's really an option to put him with Bergeron and Marchand. I'd be willing to try it. Or if you put him with Krejci and Pastrnak and Xhaka goes to Bergeron and Marchand, or like whatever, like put with DeBrusque out, it felt like an opportunity to get Hall some more top 6 minutes in some capacity. And, you know, I know Montgomery really values that balance of what the lineup can look like with Hall on the third line. And there's value in that, but at the same time, like he is a guy that you're going to want to start getting on the score sheet more.
And the other thing too, is that Bro Hall's struggles the last Baker's dozen of games or 14 games, Coyle and Frederick seem to be still doing their thing. And they just, it hasn't mattered if it's been Hall or Feliz or Xhaka. Coyle and Frederick, they've solidified themselves as a tandem. And I think that I don't think their game will change that much depending on who that third guy is. I really don't. And I think the Islanders game is a perfect example of that. Like Craig Smith had an awesome shift against the Islanders. And I thought Craig Smith has had a strong couple of games here, by the way. But he was a dog in a good way leading up to that Bruins fourth goal against the Islanders. And I just feel like to that last point you raised, Scott, like, yeah, like let Craig Smith go with Coyle and Frederick and see if they can carve something up. Because like I said, Coyle and Frederick play well together. And I think that, I think there's a better ceiling and there's more optimal value by trying to get Hall going than trying to get Smith going. And I just think that because Coyle and Frederick play a meat and potatoes style of play together, that's great for Craig Smith. And yeah, put Xhaka with Bergeron and Marchand and try to see if Hall can get going. Cause I just think it's very, very important to get to have this guy going. It's one thing to have him in your third line for depth, but in name only, but you want him to be producing, right? So I don't know. Obviously, it's easy to sit there and look at the numbers and say he's struggling. I guess I was curious if there's something in his game that you guys saw was just lacking as to why he might be struggling. I think part of it's being snake bitten. He's had some grade A chances. I'm sure you're advanced stats, Scott, if you had them in front of you, would tell you like he's getting chances. Like he's had a couple grade A chances. Did you have a breakaway tonight or something? But so I think it's being snake bitten. I think it's a lack of confidence a little bit too. And sometimes those go hand in hand, right? So
yeah, I have no stats in front of me because my computer is doing a thing where if I open any more tabs, it's gonna like crash mid recording here. So
let's not do that.
Yeah.
I wanted to just say this, pros and cons to three. So you mentioned three different options. Pro to moving Hall up to the first line would be to just try it and see, like maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work. Just kind of an interesting experiment. Maybe he gets going, maybe he doesn't. No harm, no foul, move him back. Con is that he's not comfortable playing that side. Pro to moving Pastrnak or Xhaka up and letting Hall slide into the second line, he's been good there. But I also am hesitant to do that because as a line, the check line has been doing so well recently. And there's no, like, it's not a coincidence that Krejci and Xhaka are both putting up more points at the same time and playing better at the same time. So I think it's been, I almost am just afraid to change that line at all. So that kind of takes away that option in my mind as the best option to move Hall there to the second line.
Yeah, I agree. It'd definitely be tough to split that lineup right now. You know, one thing we know about Jim Montgomery though, is like any line that goes quiet, he is probably going to try to change it up at some point. One thing I do know as far as that third line, Brian, you're right. Like in terms of goal differential, they've been really good no matter who's been with Coyle and Frederick. I do know, like from looking this up last week, that their possession numbers, like the underlying numbers are, you know, whether it's Corsi or expected goals, are a lot better with Hall there than anyone else. So he does definitely make a difference. Like he has driven play for that line, even though to what we've been talking about, the offense itself has dried up a bit recently.
And he's a good possession guy, right? Like, he controls the puck well, he knows how to shield well, so does Coyle. So that whole line has that skill set where they can maintain possession pretty well. So I mean, maybe the best option is actually to let it work itself out, maybe just keep it together, because they do not play bad together. It's just we're just trying to find a solution to the whole Hall lack of production situation.
And that's a good point too, Bridget. Maybe you do just ride it out. Maybe he is just snake bitten, because, you know, you can look at it a couple different ways. You can sit there and say he has 3 points in his last 14 games, or you could sit there and say, well, yeah, but he also had 27 points in his first 30 games, right? Because that's what you're looking at. He has 30 points in the year, 44 games. And obviously we've mentioned his struggles lately. So perhaps that is the best way to go about it. It is a long year. Slumps happen. If it's not, if it's more just him being snake bitten than his quality of play, then yeah, let him work his way out of it. I did think with DeBrusque out, like Scott, you said that too, it's a good chance to kind of move things around. But, you know, another thing too, and this is such a crazy idea that it would literally never happen, and I'm not suggesting it would, but you do forget that Taylor Hall was drafted as a center wing. But he was drafted as a center option, and they did give him center opportunities in Edmonton, not a lot, but because you think about maybe moving him around a lineup to get him going. But I mean, center's not an option in Boston. It's you forget that Taylor Hall had that skill set. So guys, there's some other things we want to get to as well. But were there any other storylines from the Islanders and Rangers game you guys wanted to go over?
I mean, just a quick note, no six back in instead of Kapanen. That was really just the only lineup difference besides, like we mentioned, Allmark going against the Islanders and Swayman going against the Rangers. Those were the only two changes.
Yeah, Swayman was great too. That I don't want to gloss over that. I mean, real quick, Yoni, is it Kapanen? Is that what you said, Bridget? Cap Kapanen. Yeah, he doesn't have NHL speed. God bless him. But I don't think he has the speed to keep up with the big boys, unfortunately. I don't know if you have a thought on him, Scott.
Yeah, and I think it also, that sort of highlights maybe another area. Like, if we're just talking about potentially areas to add depth at the deadline, another left-shot center who can play in the NHL, because you're right, like, I don't know, maybe Kapanen can still get to a better place in the next couple months, but I won't say like he hasn't looked bad by any means, but to your point, like he doesn't really look like he kind of looks like, you know, he can maybe just get by in an NHL game, but like you wouldn't want him playing in a playoff series, I don't think. You know, the reason he gets called up is because obviously Nosek isn't taking faceoffs right now. By the way, still didn't take any Thursday night, so he's still not doing that. And they do like having at least one good left shot faceoff guy in the lineup. You know, yeah, Zacha and Frederick are guys who've played center in the past, but neither one's been good on faceoffs this year. So,
and you don't want to move either of those guys.
Yeah. So that's, you know, one area. Like another, mentioned defense, but another one would be, you know, is there a left shot center who can play, you know, a fourth line role and handle himself in a playoff series? Like if you can find someone like that, you know, and if they have versatility to play some wing too, even better.
Yeah, so, we almost forgot about this name, but like Curtis Lazar was good in that he can move like a fourth line guy that can move wing or center.
Yeah, but even he was a right shot. They've been so heavy on right shot centers. Like we mentioned it like before the season. It's one of the main reasons Nosek made the team, as crazy as it sounds, but like they're gonna be key faceoff situations in a game where you want that left shot guy out there. And Nosek before this injury had been awesome in faces. I think he was like 58% on the year. So,
yeah, Nosek and Frederick were two guys who had a terrible training camp. that, in my opinion at the time, kind of deserved to potentially lose jobs if it weren't for contract status. And they both, just the second the puck dropped for the regular season, have just been completely different players. But guys, now Mark McLaughlin is a right-handed shot. Twofold here. Are you guys surprised we haven't seen him once this year? And look, they've been healthy, so that's great. But, and he's not a left shot centerman. I'm surprised we haven't seen him at least once this year. And you do talk about left shot centerman, Johnny left shot. To call him up in a fourth line opportunity, I don't think is too crazy. So what are you guys' thoughts on McLaughlin and Beecher not getting a call up at one point this year?
Yeah, I think there's just been guys ahead of them in Providence that they feel have been having better seasons and were more ready for opportunities. Obviously, we know Lauko was one of them to start the year. You know, we saw Chris Wagner called up, now Kapanen, who, by the way, like, offense is not Kapanen's game. He's outscored McLaughlin and Beecher in the AHL this year. Now, he should. He's been around longer. He's, you know, he's played a few seasons in that league. But, you know, I think they want to see more offense from both those guys in the AHL. And, you know, they both got off to very slow starts. They picked it up a little, but still probably want to see a little more. I do wonder, like, if and when we will, because to your point, like, those are guys that you would think you'd want to get a look at. I mean, McLaughlin was, you know, around the team kind of in the playoff picture last year. Not that he was a regular in the lineup for the playoffs, but like, he had been playing games leading up to the playoffs. And, you know, at least holding his own. So like, you would hope he'd at least be in position to be somewhere around there by the end of the season. But obviously you would want to get him in NHL games to see that. And Beecher, you're right. Like, that's one guy who's down in the AHL who could be that left shot center. He has always been good in faceoffs. So you wonder, like, you know, could that be that guy? Could he be that guy? You know, I just think they probably feel like he's not quite NHL ready yet. But to your point, like, if you can't find someone like that I mentioned on the trade market, you know, I think you would have to take a look at that at some point, because you just want to know what your options are behind Nosek. You don't want to get into a playoff series where Nosek goes down and that, or, you know, is banged up or whatever. And now, oh crap, we don't really have a fourth line center.
Yeah. And I think to answer your original question, Brian, I'm not surprised that we haven't seen McLaughlin or Beecher, just because of the circumstances with health, and nobody's been slumping where you're like, okay, well, let's give this other guy a chance, this young guy a chance. So no, I'm not surprised we haven't seen them. Would I have thought, you know, in the preseason or before the season that we would have seen them by now? Yeah, I would have, like, that would have been my guess, but just the way things have actually played out, it hasn't been necessary, and there hasn't been a natural time to really do it.
Yeah, that last thing you said is kind of bang on. There hasn't been a natural time to do it, because, and it's a great problem to have. Like, the Bruins, they've been healthy right up front, so it's good that we haven't seen these guys in a way, because we definitely thought we were at some point, like you said. So. Any other key points, guys? Obviously, there's a new Boston All-Star in the mix, who, you know, it was never a doubt. But was there anything before we talked about that you guys wanted to cover, or was that kind of the last thing to go over here?
I got something to say to Scott that I meant to say right off the top, which is, Scott, happy National Popcorn Day.
Oh, yes. I saw that today. Yep.
Mm-hmm. So that was, that was important. I put it in my notes just because I couldn't not. I had to get that in at some point. So,
you know, I wasn't gonna bring it up and, you know, try to make myself sound like Patrice Bergeron, playing through a puck to the face, which we didn't touch on. But, anyways, I'm kind of like just as tough, because I haven't potting through a, popcorn belly ache tonight. So, you know,
yeah, well, you can't popcorn and pod. So everybody knows that, but no, we should probably touch on the Bergeron thing real quick, just how insane he is, because every single one of his teammates, by the way, his nose, it was already effed up, but it is just so much worse. He's got a stitch under it. He's got a bruise where you can tell the side of the puck, like, it's like almost shaped like the round of a puck on his cheek. And
it looks like in Home Alone where he gets hit by the iron, when you just have that outlined on your face.
I feel like he's at the point now where, like, the next puck to the face will probably straighten his nose out because he can't get broken anymore.
I think he needs a new nose, honestly. Like, if anyone needed a new one, it's probably him at this point. Through no fault of his own, it just keeps getting hit. And the only reason we bring it up is just give him credit, I guess, because he's played through every possible injury. And even after the game today, someone asked him, you know, why did you decide to play? When did you decide to play? He said, I told medical, if they didn't want me to play, they should say so, because they can't leave it up to me. Cause no matter what, I'm going to play. I'm always going to push to play. So unless they hold me out, I'm going to play. So it's kind of one of those things where you, in other sports, that doesn't happen, by the way, with other guys, it doesn't happen. He's just kind of one of those over the top teammates that wants to be involved in every situation. Sets a good example for other people. Not saying you should play through injuries, but and Marshawn said it too after the Islanders game, it made me want to run through a wall. So it is a way to motivate your team, just show that you want to be there all the time.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny you bring up the if they left up to me, I'm playing type thing, because he's tied a couple times now, but like the possibility of some sort of load management, like down the stretch and, you know, potentially resting guys on and off, or at least, you know, for a game here and there. And it's like, yeah, that's going to be fun, because you know who's not going to want to rest for a game at any point the rest of the season is literally anyone on this team. Like none of them are going to be cool with that. So you know, I think like they'll all accept it if Montgomery does ultimately go that route. But then the other part of that, and that I should have mentioned when we're talking about call-ups, is this team also has no cap space right now. So, and they're not accruing any because they're still using long-term IR until DeBrusk comes back. So, you know, you can't even like call up an extra body. So you could only rest like one guy at a time, because you'll have your 13th forward or your 7th defenseman on the roster. But unless they can free up some money before the trade deadline in terms of cap space, like they're not going to be able to be calling guys up, you know, every couple games just to get them a game, rest someone type thing.
Yeah, he's a warrior. Guys. There was never a doubt. My only concern when I saw that happen was I thought it was a stick from Kyle Clutterbuck. Casey Cizikas. So I thought maybe the way Bergeron reacted, like it was an eye injury, and that's when it gets real scary.
Yeah, that's what I thought too. Like I couldn't tell. You couldn't tell exactly what he was covering with his glove, but I did think it was the puck. Like I thought it was the shot. But I was like, oh God, did the puck somehow get up under his visor? Fortunately, you know, it looks like got him just below that.
And I think if you ask any player, they would rather get hit with a stick in the face than a puck in the face. Like it weirdly took like a redirect off someone's leg, came up higher, like deflected up towards his face. And even with that deflection, it didn't really slow down all that much. So he got hit with the brunt of it. But I think now's a good time to switch over to a little bit of Pastrnak stuff, just because we had Rich Keefe come out with an updated report that kind of built off his last one about where negotiations stand. And unless you guys have anything else to say, I'll just kind of like recap some of the stuff that we talked about on the Rich Keefe show the other day and then get you guys to weigh in on it.
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. So I talked to Keith before the show, he gave me a little bit more information than I could really say. But like to go over what he went on the record to say on his show, there's a little bit of new information about what the Bruins' original offer was. So Keith Source told him that the Bruins' original offer was $9 million a year to start the season. And that wasn't really close to what Pastrnak was looking for. And then it was Pastrnak's side and JP Barry, his agent, who proposed the 8-year, $88 million contract. And the reason why Keith originally reported that the deal was done was because Pastrnak's side offered that and the Bruins side and Sweeney accepted it. So originally looks like that's a deal that's, you know, everybody's agreed to those terms. And then where things got off of that, where it seemed like this was imminent, and that's why Keith tweeted out the report. What changed was, according to the source that Keith talked to, Pastrnak's side, most likely his agent, I really don't think Pastrnak himself would do this, upped the price to north of $11 million a year, looking at like 11.25 or 11.5 instead of the agreed upon like 8 years, $11 million for $88 million total. So there was, according to this, a change after the original agreement to try to get more money. And I don't think that's something Pastrnak would do. It seems like a move by an agent that wants to get a higher commission. And that was the sense that Keith got as well. But I want to get your opinion on that. And also, just, you know, it seems like at the very least we can tell, like we can extrapolate that he wants to be here, and they were so close that like the intention has been to sign, where that was something that was a variable we didn't necessarily know the answer to. Now we can see that it was attempted, if this is, this reporting is, you know, the source is correct, that he's right there and wanting to be here.
So Scott, before you go, can you expound upon Bridget's numbers with Keith? In addition to that, wasn't there an Elliot Friedman report, something about 10.75 too?
I think that was Dreger. Yeah. So I was just going to mention that. Like, so my opinion on this is I am taking everyone's numbers with a grain of salt, or a lot of salt at this point, because they're just too all over the place. And like, Keith's numbers make sense. Like, that's been my guess for where it ends up, is 8 by 11 a year. But then you have Dreger saying he thinks the number is going to be 10.75. You know, I had heard somewhere, just kind of like whispers, that, you know, someone had said they thought the Bruins are offered over $11 million a year, which like we haven't heard anywhere else. So like, it's, I don't know.
I think the Bruins will accept over $11 million a year. I think they will, if the current offer is 11.25 or 11.5, I think they still accept that.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm not even going to try to guess, because I just think too many people are in different wavelengths here and throwing out different numbers that, you know, I don't know which one is true, or if any of them are, they may very well just still be negotiating. I think the one thing to me that does seem kind of clear, and it, you know, maybe Rich is right. Like I've said it from the start, I don't think Rich just makes stuff up. I think he does have a pretty good source and, you know, probably trust that source. But we have heard on the record that there's been progress in the last couple of weeks. And his agent has said that. You had Elliot Friedman say that. So that's like the one thing that I actually feel confident about, is that there's been progress and the two sides have gotten closer now.
Well, yeah, think about it.
There was also some sort of last minute change that keeps suggesting where one, you know, Pastrnak's side tried to up it. I don't know, but it definitely seems like they're closer now than they were a month ago. That seems fair to say. So
yeah,
I guess my overarching takeaway is that at least is encouraging. And as far as all the numbers that are getting thrown around, I don't want to say I'm ignoring them. I'm not doing that, but I'm just taking all of it with a lot of salt.
Well, and if you think about it, like, yeah, they have gotten closer. If the original number was 9, if they're originally $2 million apart, say, and now they're only 0.5 or 0.25 apart. So, you know, that is progress. That is closer to a deal.
If he signs for 10.75, I would be absolutely blown away, because I just don't see a world where he doesn't sign for at least 11. I don't see it. Well, let me clarify. He's worth minimum 11 based off of the production that he does in this league and comparables around the league. What does Artemi Panarin make, Scott? 11.6? 11.5?
Yeah, I would have to look it up. But I mean, that sounds right.
Pasternak is, and this is not me being biased, he's a better score than Artemi Panarin. I mean, he has like 20 something more points than him this year, and I'm sure that their points before this year were pretty comparable. So if he were to sign for almost $1 million less than what Panarin's making on his current deal, then that would be the biggest favor in the world to the Boston Bruins. Now, is David Pasternak such a good person where he understands that the Bruins' ability to remain competitive long term is for him to take a bit of a discount, that he'll take that much of a discount? Yeah, maybe he is that good of a person, because he also realizes that in addition to the money, that if he values competitiveness, then that'll help the team be competitive, then that's great. But I just think if you're out there, if I still think, like, even if they sign up for like 11, I still think that's a bit of a discount. But I don't know. I guess, like Scott said, like, it's kind of senseless because there's being thrown around. But good news, like you guys said, is that progress is being made.
Progress, yeah, if you're Canadian. But to the point about taking a discount to be competitive, it wouldn't surprise me. It wouldn't surprise me if that is something that's being considered. Because you think about why this team's doing so good this year, and it's because they've got guys on here for a discount that you would have to pay, you know, millions more somewhere else. And he wants to win. He doesn't want to play for a team where he's the only good player, or, you know, they have half a team that's decent and they're missing depth, because of the fact that he's on this contract. However, he is easily worth the 11. The Bruins would be dumb to not agree to 11.25 or 11.5 because he's worth it. Obviously they have to go back and look at the numbers. If you're going to change the numbers, you know, after you think you have something agreed upon, you do have to look at what that does for the cap, what that does change what you can do. Even if it's just a little bit, you got to look at it. So, it's interesting to think, because if it's true and originally he wanted 11 million, the fact that an extra bit at the end is being tacked on feels like it's not coming from Pasternak, because I would think he would want to take what he thinks he deserves, but not more, because he would want to be competitive. That's just how hockey players are. It's not how basketball is. It's not how other sports are, but especially it's kind of part of the Bruins culture to do that. So I wouldn't be surprised if there is a little bit of disconnect, maybe with what Pasternak wants and what the agent's pushing for, and just maybe a little bit of that. We're not 100% sure, and it will always be pushed back by JP Barry, whatever report comes out that would say or suggest anything like that. So he pushed back on Keefe's original report, and then a few weeks later confirmed that they were closer. So who knows? Agents, you also have to take what agents say lightly, or not take them like 100% seriously, because they're, at the end of the day, they're still working on getting them the money. So
yeah, I don't think the question is whether or not Pasternak will take a discount. I think he will. I just think the question is how much, right? Like I said, I think if you're looking at his value, Pasternak is worth, I mean, you could argue he's worth 12, right? So if he were to take 11, that's a discount, right? 10.75 will be best case scenario for the Bruins. But so he is an all-star. We knew that already, but technically he wasn't named to the All-Star because Linus Ullmark was the Bruins representative. Each team has to have one, and there's no denying Allmark's an All-Star this year, but Pasternak did get in along with Austin Matthews and Andre Vasilevsky as Atlantic Division fan vote-ins. You guys looking forward to seeing Pasta in those beautiful 2023 All-Star jerseys, bit of a throwback?
Yeah, and like, you know, I feel like the All-Star game at this point in the skills competition, for me, it's like, if I'm around, I'll watch it. I'm not going out of my way to watch it. You know, it's, I don't know. It, to me, it just feels like being named an All-Star doesn't really mean a heck of a whole lot anymore, just because I think they've watered it down. Like, needing to have one player from each team is really silly. You know, like, you end up with Nick Suzuki going because Montreal has to have someone. And meanwhile, like, Stamkos isn't there and Rasmus Dahlin isn't there and Hampus Lindholm's not there.
Yeah.
Bergeron's not there. Like, it's just like, okay, that there's four guys from the division who are very clearly better players than Nick Suzuki. I also feel like the NHL has just decided that defense isn't a position that deserves to go to the All-Star game. The Atlantic Division does not have a single defenseman on it. Nine forwards, two goalies. Like, I don't know. It's just weird.
I dislike the format that they've gone to. Like, I used to watch it and actually be super interested in it back when you got to see like Crosby and Ovechkin play together, and like it was actually 5-on-5 hockey, and there was, you know, it wasn't 3-on-3, and there was, it just felt more like what it was in my mind supposed to be like, which is you get a super team from, you know, from each conference, you put it together and you put who's best in there, not, you know, participation trophy for some of the teams that don't have anyone that's worth sending. So that's what it's supposed to be. That's not what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I think all major sports have a tough time garnering interest in their All-Star games, but if the idea is to sell, you know, All-Star jerseys and sell tickets and then let the players go off for a few weeks, that's fine. If your goal is to make the game matter and have all the best players there, then in my opinion, what they should do to fix it is unlimited All-Stars per team, and you get rid of the this little 3-on-3 thing they have. Go back to a 5-on-5 game, East versus West, but the caveat is that the winning team gets home ice advantage in the Stanley Cup Finals. So a little page out of MLB's book, but
I don't think that will ever happen. Well, hold on. Too important. And if you got, like, you could have a goalie just like be like, I'm just trying to rest or some shit, and just like, you know.
I mean, here's my thing is, I don't even hate like the switch to 3-on-3 or whatever, trying to make it more entertaining, because
I do. It's not real.
Unlike
hockey.
You, Bridget, I don't have fond memories of the 5-on-5 All-Star game. I thought that's
not 3-on-3 hockey is not real hockey. So what
neither
are we
was
watching?
5-on-5 All-Star game. There was no defense.
Whoa, you got
like 11-9 games.
No, Scott, you just said there's no even defensemen in the 3-on-3. So who's playing less defense? Which one? I didn't know we were going to have a fight over the All-Star game.
I'm saying it sucks no matter what. It has sucked my entire life.
All right. Order in the court.
Sorry,
wait. I'm guessing Brian was just intending for this to be a passion segment.
Order in the court. I kind of was, actually. By the way, Scott, the 1996 All-Star game was phenomenal. If you go back on YouTube and watch that game and watch the representatives on the blue line when they called out the players, and then the way Bork won that game was pretty sick. But also, I'm not saying that they should make it home ice advantage on the line. I'm only saying, like, if they actually care about making the game matter, then that's, you have to do something like that. Obviously, I don't want home ice advantage coming down to an All-Star game, but Major League Baseball had no issue doing that, which I always found interesting. But yeah, I don't know if they still do that.
Even they eventually got rid of it because they realized that was a joke too.
Yeah. Okay, guys, I think I'm out of gas. I'm overheating in the room that I'm currently in.
Me too. What happened? We're not in the same place, but all of a sudden I am
sweating bullets right now. I feel like I'm in hell, or in Dante's Inferno or something. But You guys have anything else to go over here?
That's what happens when we just start unexpectedly launching all-star game hot takes.
Yeah, just got heated real quick there.
I mean, I will say, whether you like the all-star games or not, they are most certainly at an all-time low right now. You got one guy per team, and it's 3-on-3 format. Nobody cares. To Scott, to your point, nobody cares. Like, it used to be cool with the, you know, when Ray Bourque did the 4-for-4, it was special. When Chara used to go like 108 miles an hour, 111, it was special. Now these guys, they're all wearing capes and they're wearing disguises on breakaways. It's yeah, I'm all set. You know, but anyway,
except for the jerseys. You liked the jerseys.
No, those are great. Those are great. I do like them.
They're like the neon.
The colors may be a little vibrant for some people, but I think they're pretty cool. It's kind of a 90s throwback. I'm trying to pull up their okay, so the Bruins are off till Sunday. They got the Sharks on Sunday, so some days off here after the back to back. I imagine that we'll either talk after that game or maybe Monday morning, or I think they play the Canadians for the first time in 10 years too next week. So
yeah,
maybe we'll talk after that game instead.
Oh, but yeah, Scott and I aren't making the trip.
No,
it's a little too cold this time of year to head up to watch a game against a Montreal Canadiens team that's not going to be, well, I mean, I guess we could be surprised, but like theoretically it's not the caliber game that you want to travel all the way to Montreal for. So maybe next year we'll get them, right, Scott? Maybe if they play in April, or actually they are playing in April against it, but it's the last game of the season. And as we know, usually nobody plays that game. So neither of them made sense for us to travel there this year, which is a bummer because I love going to Montreal and I did want to get to cover a game at the Bell Center, but next year.
Bridget, Scott, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you two the last hour plus, but I think it's time to hit the road, Jack. So thank you all for listening. Enjoy your weekend, and we will talk to you soon.